great. Through what felt like superhuman effort, Thane managed to shower and get into uniform. The dark circles under his eyes and the faint reddish stubble on his cheeks. Well, people had showed up for roll call looking rougher than he did. The surgical droid 21B gave him an injection that would restore his blood chemistry to bearable levels within an hour or two. All Thane had to do was make it through the briefing. When the entire squadron stood at attention, General Ryken entered the room. But he wasn't alone. Behind him walked a composed, majestic woman with dark red hair, dressed all in white.
"I don't believe it," Kendi whispered.
"Me either," said Yendor, who stood by Thane's side, a huge grin on his face.
"We finally get to meet Mon Mothma herself."
Mon Mothma, one of the only senators to openly defy Palpatine as he rose to power. Most wanted on every list of criminals the Imperial Starfleet kept. One of the leaders of the Rebel Alliance. And the woman who had spent the previous night listening to Thane spill his guts, literally and figuratively.
How could he have failed to recognize her?
He'd been even drunker than he thought. Of course, the news reports from the Empire only showed images of Mon Mothma from many years before. She had been underground for some time. But Thane had been too intoxicated to recognize the woman even when she held his head over a basin as he puked his guts out.
Great. Just great.
If only he could have sunk into the floor and let it close back over him to hide any evidence that he'd ever existed. But Thane had to stand there and pretend everything was normal.
"Good morning," she said, her voice as calm and steady as it had been the night before. "It is an honor to meet more of the warriors who have helped the Rebel Alliance stay strong during these dark times."
Pride rippled through the squadron, even getting to Thane despite his shame. To think that the leader of the entire rebellion would say it was an honor to meet them? He doubted the Emperor had ever said such a thing to any of his troops.
Mothma continued, "All of you understand that obviously we must be on the move soon."
Her eyes studied each of the pilots in turn. Thane wondered how a voice that gentle could belong to the same person as that steely gaze. "However, Corona Squadron, you will not accompany the rest of the fleet to their new rendezvous point." Everyone exchanged glances. Was it some kind of penalty for their carousing last night? Or some other, more significant infraction? But they hadn't done anything worth any kind of penalty, so far as Thane knew. In fact, they were one of the top squadrons in the fleet. Mon Mothma then said,
"We have important tasks for you."
No further words were necessary. She meant intelligence work. That also meant danger. But Thane hadn't joined the rebellion to play it safe.
"You've been chosen for this work even though many of you are new to the rebellion. However, you have the right skills for the tasks to come."
Mon Mothma took a seat at the one desk in the small space. Somehow the sheer power of her presence transformed the room into a chamber of state. She's already the Emperor's match, Thane thought, even if Palpatine doesn't know it yet. General Ryken spoke up.
"For the foreseeable future, Corona Squadron will remain based on the Liberty. You'll get permanent bunk assignments within the next few hours."
"Aw, man," Yender deadpanned. "I always hoped I'd get to live in Asana someday."
Ryken raised an eyebrow. "Excuse me, Private Yendor?"
"I meant I always hoped I'd get to live in Asana someday, sir."
That made the others laugh. And even Ryken smiled. Mon Mothma's face remained impassive, but not disapproving. The same minor informality would have landed an Imperial officer in the brig. In the Rebel fleet, discipline could coexist with humanity. "Both group and individual assignments will be discussed as they arise." Mon Mothma continued as smoothly as though there had been no interruption. "But you all deserve to know, the risks will be considerable, even greater than those you already face. It is possible that any or all of you may be asked to go on missions with little or no chance that you will ever return. If you feel you cannot accept such missions, speak now. There is no shame in doing so." Everyone remained silent and at attention,
wordlessly accepting the danger. Thane kept his gaze straight forward, not directly looking at anyone in the room. But he could feel Mon Mothma's gaze on him. When the quiet had gone on long enough, Riken nodded.
Good. For now, get your new members up to date on our protocols.
That was accompanied by a nod toward Kendi, the newest of them all.
And await further instructions.
Thank you for your courageous service, officers, Mon Mothma said. You are dismissed. As everyone turned to go, and just as Kendi leaned toward Thane to ask a question, Mothma added, Lieutenant Kyrell, I'd like to have a word. And he'd been so close to making a clean getaway. Thane turned around, again at attention, to face Mon Mothma. From the corner of his eye, he caught a glimpse of General Riken. The general seemed surprised. At least Mon Mothma hadn't shared the tale of Thane's drunken moping with the entire rebel command. Not yet, anyway. The doors slid shut after the last of the others left, and Thane was alone with Mon Mothma. Under most circumstances, junior officers waited for their superiors to speak first. Thane thought this might be an exception to that rule. Ma'am, I apologize for my impropriety last night. Obviously, I overindulged in our, celebrations. It won't happen again. Mon Mothma leaned back in her chair, mouth quirked. Lieutenant Kyrell, if I drummed pilots out of the service every time one of them had a little too much of the engine room hooch, there would be no rebellion. Yes, ma'am. But why, then, had she singled him out? He remembered some of what he'd said last night about freezing up, and his horror deepened. If you're concerned that I'll fail to do my duty on one of the special missions for Corona Squadron, you don't have to be, ma'am. My concerns are irrelevant, she said crisply. The problem here is that you're questioning yourself. Self-doubt will cripple you more surely than fear ever could. I hear you're an outstanding pilot, Kyrell. Moment to moment, I feel certain you'll do your duty. However, if you fall apart after every major engagement, you'll self-destruct before long. Thane could say nothing. He knew she was right. She continued. Many people in the Rebellion have friends or family who serve the Empire in some capacity, or on planets or ships that may fare badly in this war. You aren't the only one with conflicts. Yendor sometimes spoke quietly of his son, Bizu, left behind on Ryloth. Kendi's entire family back on Ilo would now be at risk because of her defection. Yes, ma'am, I realize that. Mon Mothma rose to her feet, and as she stepped closer, Thane saw in her expression the kindness he'd sensed through his haze the previous night. It's all right if you still love someone on the other side of this war, as long as you love what you're fighting for even more. He had never thought of himself as fighting for anything. Thane had joined the Rebellion to fight against the Empire, not for the restoration of the Republic or any of the other grand schemes people talked about. As long as the Empire fell, he figured the rest could sort itself out. Now, however, he finally asked himself what his decision really meant. Fighting against the Empire meant fighting for galactic authority that valued justice and valor more than raw power, that treated the governed with respect instead of endless deception and manipulation. Fighting against the slavery of the Bodachi and Wookiees meant fighting for individuals to have the right of self-determination. Fighting against those who callously and brutally destroyed Alderaan meant fighting for every other inhabited world in the entire galaxy. Thane believed in all those things, enough to die for them. And yet he knew that wasn't why he was in the fight. He joined the Rebellion to take down the Empire, and remained unmoved by all those starry-eyed notions of the New Republic to come. Just because he thought the next galactic government would be better than the Empire didn't mean he thought it would be good. In the end, it would be another bureaucracy, another group dominated by the core worlds, while the Outer Rim had to handle problems on its own. Superior to the Empire in every way, of course, but that wasn't exactly a high bar to clear. So his answer was no. He didn't love the Rebellion more than he loved Sienna. But he could be willing to die for only one of those things, and he knew which one he had to choose, no matter how much it hurt. Mon Mothma said, "Can you do your duty, Kyrell?"
"Yes, ma'am,"
he said. Thane felt the full weight of his words. He had just sworn to do whatever it took, up to and including taking Sienna's life. Yet he knew he would never hesitate to fire in battle again. Chapter 18. Jude had never mentioned that Bespin was so beautiful. Sienna stared down at the viewscreen displaying the images of round-edged, clay-colored buildings, seemingly aloft in the clouds. It was so like Jude not to have mentioned the way the filtered sunlight turned the sky an eternal sunset pink, or the elegance of Cloud City structures, which bloomed above slender unipod cables, as though they were parasol sunshades dangling in midair. Instead, whenever she had talked about her homeworld, Jude had discussed the geological reasons Tabana gas mining was so difficult, or the aerodynamic properties of the glider she'd flown as a child. No matter what, Jude had always been a scientist first. She had searched for truth as avidly as those bounty hunters had searched for the Millennium Falcon. How galling to have that scum succeed where Imperial officers had failed. Yet small civilian vessels had the advantage of passing through space largely unnoticed, the one thing no Star Destroyer could do. Although Sienna would have liked to have gone down to Cloud City, perhaps to meet Jude's parents, she remained aboard the Executor. The strike team tasked with capturing the crew of the Falcon comprised only a few individuals, including Lord Vader, who usually preferred to oversee operations personally. Whatever else was happening, all the thousands of other people assigned to the Executor had little to do but wait. Sienna would have appreciated a task at the moment, any task, no matter how difficult or time-consuming. It would have been a distraction from her fury at Thane Kyrell. Bespin made things worse, because Bespin meant Jude. Even thinking of her lost friend reminded Sienna of the way Jude had helped figure out the truth about that stupid laser cannon project. That incident had proved that Sienna and Thane could disagree, as did his decision to leave the Imperial Starfleet. As upset as Sienna had been when Thane deserted, she had at least understood his decision, even if she would never agree with it. But joining the Rebellion? How could Thane ever have become a terrorist? He'd always held the Rebel Alliance in as much contempt as she had. When had that changed, and how? Had he forgiven the destruction of the Death Star and of the hundreds of thousands of people aboard? Yes, Alderaan had been destroyed first as a gambit to end the war before it began, and that gambit had failed. But that was one space station, one planet, one terrible day. The Rebels' attacks on Imperial ships and bases had never ceased, as if they could not spill enough blood to slake their thirst. If they fought for a principle instead of mindless hatred of the Empire, they would propose peace talks or attempt to claim an independent star system where they could live under whatever governance they chose. But no. Instead, they killed again and again and again. For all Thane's strength, for all his skill in combat, he had never been a violent man. So how could he be a part of such horror? Maybe his father did this to him, Sienna thought as she walked through the corridors of Cloud City. A few grunting Ugnaughts hurried past her, but she hardly even registered them. In her mind's eye, she stood behind Thane the day he'd collapsed on the ENA obstacle course when she had bandaged him afterward. At the time, she had been moved almost to tears by the evidence of the abuse, the knowledge that his father's cruelty had become physical as well as emotional, and by the full realization of how bravely Thane had endured his injuries until the very moment of his fall. Those who were brutalized sometimes became brutal in return. Was Thane now lashing out at the world that had hurt him first? No. He'd always sworn he would be nothing like his father. Sienna had always believed him. But that left her with no answers at all.
"I don't believe it," said Nash Windrider.
Startled from her reverie, Sienna saw she'd reached the landing platform, where her friend stood in front of the Millennium Falcon. their prey had flown straight to Bespin, as Lord Vader had predicted. So why did we even bother with the asteroid field chase? She thought. We could just have come here and set the trap for them even earlier. She walked onto the platform where Nash stood, hands on his hips as he looked at the captured ship.
When I saw it during the initial chase, I couldn't understand why that thing wasn't in the junkyard. Now that I study it up close, I realize no junkyard would accept it. It's a miracle the thing still runs at all.
She felt a spark of grudging admiration for the Falcon. As someone who'd learned to fly on a V-171, occasionally she got sentimental about clunky old ships. Our orders?
We're to disable the hyperdrive. Why are we disabling a ship we've already captured?
Lord Vader has his reasons, Nash said, raising one eyebrow. The subtext seemed to be, do you want to tell him he's wrong? Sienna nodded.
Got it.
She and Nash worked together for several moments in silence. Even in the tight confines of the engineering pit within the Falcon, it seemed to her that Nash stood closer than necessary. But maybe she was imagining things, because she wanted so much to be alone while she worked out her thoughts about Thane. Disabling the hyperdrive proved simple. Before long, she and Nash were on the shuttle that would take them back to the Executor. They were cleared to fly openly now, because another pilot sought by Darth Vader, another target lured into this trap, had just landed. Within minutes, this entire chase would be over. Princess Leia would stand trial. Her fellow rebels would be made an example of. Perhaps the rebellion itself would be exposed. And Thane with it. She moved through the ship on autopilot, reporting to her bridge shift with gratitude that the next few hours promised to be uneventful. That promise didn't come true. Vader's suspicions did. Sure enough, the Millennium Falcon zoomed off its platform, nearly made its escape, then inexplicably headed back to Cloud City and dived beneath it.
Where do they think that's going to get them?
Nash's long fingers hit the toggles that would focus all sensors on the Falcon.
Who knows?
She could almost pity these people, believing in their freedom, when in reality Darth Vader had been two steps ahead of them the entire time. Although the bridge of the Executor now buzzed with renewed activity, Sienna could do little but monitor these final moments of the hunt. Still, she felt oddly detached from everything that was happening, even when Lord Vader returned to the bridge. Admiral Piet said, "They'll be within the range of the tractor beam within moments, my lord." Through the heavy rasp of his respirator, Vader said,
"Did your men disable the hyperdrive on the Millennium Falcon?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Good. Prepare the boarding party and set your weapons for stun."
Sienna would normally have felt a little thrill of pride at her service being recognized. Instead, she felt detached, as if this were only a drill or a memory, until the horrifying moment when the Falcon leaped into hyperspace and vanished.
How the hell did they do that?
Nash gaped at her in disbelief. Sienna might have shared his outrage if she hadn't caught a glimpse of Admiral Piet's face. He had turned ashen, and even from her place down in the data pits, she could see the knot in his throat bob as he swallowed hard.
"We're about to be killed," she thought.
"The Admiral, Nash, and I. Vader will murder us all. We completed our assignment, but it doesn't matter." For years, she'd been thankful she'd never seen one of Vader's eliminations in person. Now it looked as if the first one she'd ever witnessed would be her own. But Vader simply stood there a few moments longer in silence, then turned and walked off the bridge without another word. When the door slid shut behind him, Piet sagged for a moment, like someone who had put down a heavy burden and whose body still felt the weight. Nash leaned onto his monitors, head in hand. Sienna waited to feel relief too, but the dread only dulled and deepened until it felt as if it had sunk into her very bones. That evening, as they sat in a corner of the Quadrant cafeteria, empty plates in front of them, Sienna asked,
"Why do you think people joined the rebellion?"
Baris shrugged.
"The same reason other people commit robbery or go into business with the Hutts. They can't fit into any normal society, so they hate those of us who do."
Thane had been at the top of the elite flight track. If he'd stayed in the service, Sienna had no doubt he'd be looking at an early promotion to Commander 2. She'd have to find another answer. What do you think, Nash?
Who cares how scum like that gets started?
He said too lightly. I only want to see them finished.
Why, do you ask?
Baris took another sip of her nutritive milk. While more regular meals were available upon request, only the most senior officers could indulge without being thought soft. Sienna had eaten her last piece of bread more than 2 years ago. Sienna shrugged.
No reason. You're in an odd mood today, Nash said. His warm brown eyes studied hers.
He had become so thin since they graduated from the academy, his frame going from wiry to gaunt, but his eyes, at least, were the same.
What's wrong?
She didn't dare tell the whole truth, but if anyone could help her understand Thane's choice, it would be Nash. I've been thinking about Thane a lot lately.
Baris slid an arm around Sienna's shoulders. Nash's smile faded into sadness.
I still can't believe it, he said softly. Thane was the last person I ever thought would commit suicide.
After the Death Star, none of us were ourselves, Baris said, shaking her head.
But he had so much to live for. His commission, top ranking as a pilot, revenge against the rebels, and he had you, Sienna.
Nash stumbled over the last part, though he covered it well enough.
That ought to be enough for any man.
Sienna didn't meet his eyes.
I keep wondering why he felt so hopeless.
Only a man without hope would go from the Empire to the Rebellion. It was one thing for Thane to walk away from his oath because he felt he could no longer keep it, but to join a group of nihilistic guerrilla warriors? He was no idealist, so he couldn't have been converted to whatever bizarre political dogma they used to sway the gullible. Thane could only be going through the motions, no more.
Did Thane have any other close friends aboard the Death Star? Maybe someone you didn't know about?
Baris hesitated, tucking a loose strand of black hair back into her regulation bun.
Like, well, a girl from the academy. From before he fell for you, I mean. He could still have been upset by her death.
It was Nash who answered.
He was never with anyone while we were at school.
I don't suppose there was anyone back on Jellucan.
No. Sienna had occasionally seen him walking out with second-wave girls, but never the same one twice.
With a shrug, Baris said,
Maybe it was something that happened on your homeworld.
He was upset after the Death Star. He left his duty, but meant only to go home and collect himself. And then the visit went terribly wrong.
I always had an inkling his relationship with his father was strained at best, abusive at worst, Nash said.
Oh, don't give me those wide eyes, Sienna. I lived in the same room as Thane for 3 years. You think I never saw the scars on his back?
His expression had become set, hard.
I'll bet his father lit into Thane at the worst possible moment, drove him over the edge.
I wouldn't put it past Thane's dad. That much, at least, was completely true.
But by then, Sienna realized Nash had no answers to offer.
Thane's choice to join the Rebellion would remain an infuriating mystery. An arrow lodged in her flesh, one that couldn't be pulled free, and so kept the wound open forever. She remained lost in thought until Nash had escorted her almost all the way back to her room. Her door stood at the far end of the longest corridor of the barracks section, so they were far away from anyone else when he put one hand on her arm.
"Going to bed already?" he said, his tone light. But nobody could miss his true meaning.
Sienna had suspected this might be coming, but in her preoccupation had failed to see it would be tonight. No wonder Baris had excused herself earlier. She was going to be in serious trouble for enabling him.
Nash, it's a bad idea.
On the contrary, it's a wonderful idea. His eyes danced with mischief and anticipation.
Don't you think we deserve to have a little fun?
As gently as she could manage, Sienna answered, I think you want more than fun, and I can't give it to you. Nash tilted his head, not disagreeing with her, but not withdrawing either.
Could I perhaps persuade you to spend more rec time together? So we could get to know each other without Baris or our other friends in the way?
I realize the shift from friends to, well, more, it can be tricky. But I think it's worth trying. And for you, I'd be willing to wait.
She took a step away from him, her back bumped against the metal mesh of the wall. How ridiculous to be as bashful and clumsy as a schoolgirl. More firmly, she said, I can't. His face fell, and she could see he'd gone from flirty to aghast in only seconds.
Oh, what an idiot I've been. We were talking about Thane only an hour ago. I ought to have realized this is hardly the time. Please forgive me.
It's okay, really. I miss him too, you know. Nash looked so stricken that Sienna found herself feeling guilty. The lies she had told about Thane's suicide had saved his life, but wounded his other friends forever.
I didn't mean to make light of how you felt about him.
I know you didn't.
Sienna managed to smile.
So, let's say goodnight.
Nash sighed.
Let's.
He squeezed her hand once, just for a moment, and then walked away. As her bunk door slid shut and locked, Sienna sagged onto her bed, so tired she felt as if she'd pulled 3 shifts in a row. She told herself that she'd turned Nash down because she had no romantic feelings for him. So far as it went, that was true. But she couldn't deny that a big part of the reason was what she still felt for Thane Kyrell.
I should hate him now. I have to learn to hate him, but I can't. I never could.
The small communicator unit in her corner of the bunk blinked. The blue light that meant the message was from a non-imperial source. For Sienna, that could only mean a hollow from home. Her fingers had almost hit the button before she caught herself. Should I watch this right away? Should I watch it at all? She still missed Jellocand. Even though she drank her nutritives, she longed for a piece of bread every single time she walked into the cafeteria. She spoke to her family regularly, by hollow, instead of relying on the bi-monthly communique suggested by the internal affairs officer. From her pocket, Sienna pulled the small pouch in which she kept the leather bracelet that tied her to Wynette. It had been a long time since she'd last asked her dead sister to look through her eyes.
Too long,
she thought with a surge of feeling that made her fingers close tightly around the pouch.
I don't have to choose between being Jellucani and being a good Imperial officer. I can be both.
Sienna was smiling as she started the hollow and saw her papa's face looking out at her. After only a few words of his pre-recorded speech, her smile faded. Ronadam's gray eyebrows were arched so high they nearly reached his receding hairline.
You want to return to your home planet for an undefined period of time.
I've accrued 7 weeks of leave time, sir. I strongly doubt I will use them all.
Ideal Imperial officers used no leave time whatsoever, unless they had to recover from a serious illness or injury. Sienna had never asked to take a single day until now.
Ronadam rose from his desk and clasped his hands behind his back. His green eyes had a strangely milky quality, as if they belonged to a far older man.
Your decision to use your leave time is your own. But I'm not questioning the length of your absence. I'm questioning your motivation to return to your home planet at all.
My mother will be put on trial for embezzling funds from the local mine where she works. Worked as a supervisor.
The words alone sounded surreal to Sienna.
Her mother? A thief? It was impossible. She cared nothing for physical possessions beyond the few things they already owned, and her promotion at the mine had made them all so proud. In the valleys of Jellocan, to have one's honor questioned is the most serious crisis an individual can face, sir. Those who believe in that person's honor must gather around them at that time. It is a sacred duty.
Sacred, indeed.
In Ronadam's mouth, the word became a sneer.
You do realize, Lieutenant Commander Rhee, that the charges against your mother would have been brought by the local Imperial authority. Are you questioning the judgment of a fellow servant of the Emperor?
Of course not, sir, but my mother could have been framed for the crime, or there may be some other mistake that has led to a misunderstanding.
Ranadam pursed his lips in sympathy, an expression that was meant to mock Sienna more than convince her.
Do you hear your own rationalizations, Rhi?
I don't want to judge based on incomplete information, sir. I must investigate this for myself. She managed to look him in the eyes. No matter what the truth may be, I will face it.
Slowly he nodded. Yes, this could be a learning experience for you.
He paced in front of her, step by measured step.
Take your leave, Lieutenant Commander. Witness your mother's trial.
Sienna tried to imagine her mother standing before a judge, hands shackled. She couldn't. Ranadam began to smile.
And when you return, report to me immediately. Let me know the final ruling on her guilt or innocence, and tell me whether you believe that judgment to be justified.
No matter what the judge ruled, Sienna would be expected to support it, even if he sent her mother to a prison camp. Oh, that won't happen. It can't. The judge will make the right decision in the end. So she told herself. She wanted to believe it. But for the first time, her oath to the Empire did not sustain Sienna. The feeling she had worked hard to keep at bay for the past 3 years, the one she had never allowed herself to consciously think of before, could be held back no longer. Doubt.
Chapter 19. Thane angled his X-Wing low until it nearly skimmed the thick canopy of trees covering the surface of Dakar. In the twilight, he could see leaves thrashing beneath the other ships as if caught in a windstorm. If anyone were on the ground beneath them, Corona Squadron would be detected within minutes.
We're not going to be here that long, Thane reminded himself.
He opened the secure channel.
Corona 5, this is Corona 4, do you copy?
Copy,
Kendi replied.
Negative readings here. I'm not picking up any artificial power sources.
Same here.
Corona Squadron had been sent to check out Dakar for any possible sign of a new Imperial outpost. Apparently, deep cover spies on Coruscant had reported massive amounts of materiel being processed for the Imperial Starfleet. Nobody knew precisely what it was being used for, but there were rumors of a new large ship construction facility. But if the Empire had begun building new Star Destroyers or some other kinds of superweapons, it wasn't doing so on Dakar. They'd run scans on every hemisphere, searched planetary and solar orbits, and come up empty. Thane realized he'd rather have found something. At least then they'd have learned what the Empire was planning, and they could have taken meaningful action. Sabotaging the factories, placing a few surveillance droids in key locations, and so on. For now, he simply had to endure the suspense. He said,
Corona 2, do you also read negative?
Confirmed. Complete negative on Imperial activity,
Yendor replied.
Unless the Empire's drafting small woodland creatures all of a sudden.
Doubt it, Thane considered for a moment.
We should list this planet as a potential base in future.
The Empire's not interested. Not much space lane traffic in this area, and there's plenty of water.
Plus it beats Hoth,
Yendor said.
The belly of a Sarlacc beats Hoth.
Thane began punching in the navigational codes that would take him back to the Liberty. Corona leader apparently agreed.
Let's get out of here.
Once they had returned to their ship, the rest of Corona Squadron went through maintenance on their X-Wings in the muggy repair bay of the Liberty, trading the usual banter back and forth.
Come on,
Yendor said to the squadron leader and the eldest pilot in the group, a stately woman who was addressed only as the Contessa.
You can't tell me this isn't more fun than life in a palace.
She gave him a look.
You need to spend more time in palaces.
You know I do,
Yendor agreed.
You can fix me up with that, right?
Honestly,
the Contessa huffed, but not without affection.
You could learn from Smikes here. He never pretends we're having a better time than we are.
We're never having a good time,
Smikes said from beneath his X-Wing. He had a bandana tied around his forehead to combat the endless sweat suffered by any human who lived on a Mon Calamari ship.
We're in a war. What's fun about this?
So cranky,
Yendor said amiably.
Someday I'm gonna hear you laugh, and I hope a protocol droid is around to record it.
Don't be so hard on Smikes, Kendi said, tossing her green hair over her shoulder. He's just grumpy. I'm not grumpy. I'm a realist, Smikes insisted. He was, in fact, always grumpy, but a great pilot.
Thane shook his head as he looked at all of them. As mixed up a crew as you were likely to find. People who wouldn't have spent time together outside this squadron or this war under any circumstances. But at least they had his back. Unlike some people. Much later, once everyone else had finished up, Kendi said, I have to admit, intelligence work is a little less glamorous and dramatic than I always thought it would be.
Thane didn't look up from the open panel in his wing. My guess is that the dramatic stuff is what's most likely to get you killed. We can deal with that when we come to it. I'll do whatever we have to do, but I'm not suicidal.
No reply followed for a few minutes, during which Thane remained engrossed in his work. He'd almost forgotten he and Kendi were even speaking until she said, in a low voice, You know, that's what Sienna reported.
He remained where he was, staring into the wires and chips that powered his ship. The wrench in his hand remained poised above the coupling he intended to work on. He didn't look up at Kendi.
What did Sienna report?
She identified you as a probable suicide on Jellucan. I heard about it through some other classmates of ours, and I sent a holo to Sienna right away because I couldn't believe it. She didn't really want to talk, though. At the time, I thought it was because she was hurting. Then, when I realized you were here with the rebellion, I figured, hey, Thane covered his tracks pretty well. But the more I think about it, you could have fooled anyone else in the galaxy more easily than Sienna. The two of you know each other too well. She covered for you, didn't she?
Yeah. It was as if Thane were back on Jellucan, shutting the door behind Sienna as she left. He'd believed she would turn him in no matter what.
She did. Kendi whistled. Sienna re-broke an oath?
Sometimes we're loyal to more than one thing. He spoke from memory, haltingly, but still sure. When there's a conflict, we have to choose which loyalty to honor. I guess, she chose me.
Sienna had covered for him. She'd orchestrated that elaborate lie, when she never lied, all for him. Knowing her as he did, knowing where she came from, Thane realized what it had cost her to do that. The hard knot of anger he'd been carrying in his chest for the past 3 years finally went slack. But that made it worse, because his anger had been his only shield against losing her. The thump of boots hitting the floor of the hangar made Thane look up from his X-Wing. Kendi had hopped down from her own starfighter to stand beneath his, hands on her hips.
Then why isn't she here?
Sienna?
She always said an oath was forever. A promise is a promise. You had to be true to your personal honor,
Kendi said, and she had begun to sound angry.
I didn't even think she could lie. Now I discover that she broke her word to save you, but she still serves in the Imperial Starfleet? How can she do that? If she could defy them for your sake, why won't she do it for the sake of the entire galaxy?
Sienna was never disloyal to the Empire. Thane hated that, but he knew it to be true. One time back then, she chose her loyalty to me. That doesn't mean she set aside her oath to the Empire.
I don't see the difference.
That's because you're not from Jellucan. And you don't know Sienna like I do. The coupling could wait. Thane shut the panel, stowed his tools, and slid down to face Kendi.
Listen, you and I were in the Imperial Starfleet too, remember? Good people can wind up in the service of evil.
Kendi shook her head as she folded her arms across her chest. The air smelled like welding tools and engine grease. Her dark green hair glinted in the harsh hangar lights.
Good people can start to serve the Empire, but if they stay, they stop being good. You do one thing you thought you'd never do, follow one order that makes you feel sick inside, and you tell yourself it's the only time? This is an exception. This isn't the way it's always going to be.
Thane remembered how he'd tried willing himself not to notice the pitiful slavery of the Bodachi.
Yeah, I know.
But you keep going,
Kendi continued. Her gaze had become distant. By now she spoke to herself more than to him.
You make one more compromise and then another,
And by the time you realize what the Empire really is, you're almost too far down that road to turn back. I managed to do it, but if the others hadn't felt the same way, if I'd had to leave on my own instead of getting away with a group, I might have stayed. And I don't like the person I would have become. By now, Thane had realized that Kendi was trying to warn him that the Sienna he had known, the one who had saved him, might not even exist any longer. Probably that was true. By now, Sienna might have participated in one of the punitive massacres the Empire inflicted on non-compliant worlds. She could have been in one of the Star Destroyers in the Battle of Hoth, coolly aiming their lasers at the many rebel starfighters that never got away. The Empire had probably corroded her honor into stiffness, snobbery, and ruthlessness. Knowing all that didn't make it easier to accept. Thane only said, "Guess we'll never know. Not like either of us is ever going to see her again." In the instant before he turned to walk away from the hangar, he glimpsed the expression on Kendi's face. It was pity. Although he continued working throughout the day, Thane brooded enough that Yendor finally asked him who died. And even Smikes told him to cheer up. After they'd finished the full briefing about Dakar, he excused himself from the usual group meal and aftershift card games. Instead, he holed up in one of the rare empty computer bays on the Liberty so he could be alone. Solitude was a rare luxury for a rebel pilot, just as it had been for any Academy cadet. He rarely got to be alone with his thoughts. As a boy, if he wanted to be alone, he was always able to sneak out to the fortress. Sometimes Sienna had been there, but her presence had never disturbed him. Before they were 10 years old, they'd known when they'd let each other remain silent, how to be close to each other without intruding. How many people ever understood someone that well? "We wouldn't understand each other at all now," he reminded himself. "She's been an Imperial officer for years. Everything good in Sienna got poisoned a long time ago. If we met up again now, she wouldn't cover for me. Count on it. I need to move on." Thane stretched out, wiped his brow, and pulled up the news feed from Jellucan. Seeing his native world made him whatever the opposite of homesick was. The planet changed month by month, always for the worse. It was impossible to read the reports without realizing that the rugged, primitive world he'd grown up on didn't really exist any longer. The girl he'd known and come to love, the Sienna who had been, was as lost as the old Jellucan. So he let the first few gloomy images play out in front of him, the desolation ironically easing the ache he felt inside. Until they reported on the upcoming trial of Vereen Rhee, Thane sat up so fast the hollow rippled into static, unable to assess the ideal distance to project from its viewer. "That's not possible," he told himself. "I imagined that because Kendi and I just talked about Sienna, and I've got her on my mind." But then the face of Sienna's mother again took shape. The label hovering beneath her image read, "The Accused." Embezzlement? Impossible. Someone from the valleys might snap in a fit of rage and hit or kill you. Crimes of passion took place there the same way they did anywhere. Perhaps they also fell prey to other criminal impulses, stealing from shopkeepers, that kind of thing. But a crime as premeditated and corrupt as embezzlement went against everything they believed. Surely there were hypocrites among the Valley kindred, but not anyone in Sienna's family. He had only to know Sienna to be sure of that. Thane's lips pressed together in a hard, tight line. If anything remained of the Sienna he'd known, it wouldn't survive this. Once Sienna condoned her own mother's conviction and imprisonment, she would truly be lost forever. As lost to him as if he really had killed her that day above Hoth. "Goodbye," he thought, remembering the little girl in her plain brown dress, the fallen autumn leaf. It was time to leave her behind forever.
"This can't be Jellucan," Sienna wanted to say to her shuttle pilot. "You brought me to the wrong system." Yet she knew too well that she was on the right planet. It was just that everything had changed. Thick fog seemed to have settled permanently on the ground, and the air was thick with grimy soot.
The mines that had carved gouges in so many of the mountains did not attempt to filter the byproducts of the work, so people simply walked through it, coughing, some with kerchiefs or light masks over their mouths and noses. At first, Sienna thought the masks were confusing her, making it harder for her to tell valley folk from second wavers. Although she'd seen more mass-produced clothing the last time she'd been home, the two groups had still been distinct. Now it was impossible to discern any difference. She'd never thought she would miss the gaudy long coats of the second wavers, but she searched in vain for even one flash of crimson or cobalt. No shaggy muniacs wandered the streets any longer. People either rode ridge crawlers or walked. Valencia had seemed greatly changed to her 3 years ago, but it had at least been recognizable then. Now the migrant worker shanties had multiplied to the point that the original buildings, carved of stone, were almost invisible. The senatorial building that had become an imperial garrison was now a full military outpost, ringed by a force field that glowed a sickly green, and with a constant flow of officers and stormtroopers walking through its gates. Jelukani people walked more quickly past the outpost, Sienna noticed. They didn't want to attract notice. Nobody would meet her eyes.
"I shouldn't have asked you to come," Perrin Rhee repeated, just outside the door of her old bedroom. "I thought of myself and not you. What will your superior officers say?"
"They'll say a mistake has been made, because it has." Sienna tossed aside her uniform jacket, which landed atop her trousers and boots. Her old clothes still fit and were only slightly musty. The mauve leggings and tunic seemed so impossibly soft. Had she really worn things like this every day? She opened the door and stepped into the main room, where her father stood with his hands clasped, as if preparing to give a formal report. She took hold of his shoulders and squeezed. "It's all right, Papa. The truth will come out." Her father's face remained tense and drawn. "The real culprit is unlikely to be identified by the authorities."
"Because they haven't found him yet? Well, we'll see about that."
If only she'd already made commander. That rank might have done her some good when she went to speak with the magistrate the next day.
"Forgive me for saying it, Papa, but you don't look good. Have you been eating?"
"With your mother gone, I lose track of time."
Sienna paused. She hadn't realized until earlier that day that her mother remained jailed, and she couldn't believe her father when he said Mama couldn't even have visitors. That was another thing to take care of with the magistrate the next day. She'd requested an audience for first thing in the morning, so surely she would hear from his staff shortly. Surely. Her father had some meat and root vegetables in the refrigeration unit, so she started throwing together a basic soup. She hadn't cooked in so long, but she still remembered which herbs to crush and the way the scent clung to her fingers afterward. Her stomach growled, eager for something, anything that wasn't imperial nutritives. Sienna had taken a couple of bottles of nutritive drink with her, but better to save those for the trip home. When the broth began to bubble, Sienna stepped away from the hearth and sat on the floor cushions beside the low table, across from her father. Only after she'd taken her place did she realize it didn't feel awkward at all, even after years of eating at higher tables, sitting on benches, or in chairs. Home remained home. Perrin shook his head slowly.
"It's good to see you again, my girl."
He touched the side of her face just for a moment.
"I should have come earlier."
"No. I know there's a war on. You do what you have to do."
The new gray hair at his temples surprised Sienna, but not as much as his demeanor. Her father had always been her rock, unyielding and often tough, but invariably fair, forever strong. Now his spirit was weary, so much so that she could see it as clearly as she could see the new lines on his face.
"There aren't any flags out front," Sienna said. "Are the kindred refusing to acknowledge the charges?"
That was an act of defiance against authority, anathema to those in the valleys, and yet truly unjust accusations sometimes earned that response.
"They acknowledge them," her father's voice tightened, "but no one has come."
That couldn't be right. "No one?"
He nodded. She remembered the days she'd remained at the home of the Nier family.
standing by them in their darkest hours. They had all celebrated together when the accusers had finally backed down and accepted the Imperial version of events. Though now that made Sienna wonder.
How could anyone who knows Mama think that she would ever steal?
They know she didn't take the money, her father snapped. They all know it, but not one will say so.
But to refuse to stand by someone wrongly accused...
The Empire accuses her. We owe our allegiance to the Empire. To stand against it would be the most base dishonor.
You can't stand against Mama. Sienna stared at her father in shock.
Can you?
Your mother understands the demands of honor, as do I. Have you forgotten them, Sienna?
His piercing gaze caught her short, and she dared say no more.
But what about the truth? She thought. How could the truth not matter anymore? When did it become honorable to accept bald-faced lies?
Forgive my temper, he said, as he sounded even more exhausted than before. These days have been difficult.
I know. I'm sorry, but I'm here now.
An hour passed. They ate soup and bread in silence, and all her fear and worry could not keep Sienna from relishing the taste of real food in her mouth. Sitting near her own hearth, being with her father, even hearing the cries of salt hawks, at moments she could imagine that she had never become an officer, never even left Jellucan. That it was all a dream. But she couldn't indulge in daydreaming for long. Reality weighed on her more heavily with every minute that passed, because the answering message from the magistrate's office never came, and neither did anyone from the Valley Kindred, not one soul. The low trench of sand outside their home remained empty, advertising the depths of the Ree family's shame. The sky had gone completely dark overhead before Sienna dared to ask,
Papa, why are you so sure no one will find who really did this?
You know the answer. Don't insult us both by making me tell you.
She had already drawn the most logical conclusion. The embezzler was an Imperial official, someone who ranked high enough to falsify the records.
The magistrate won't publicly question Imperial officials? Even then, prosecuting Mama, I...
Sienna, listen to me. You are a member of the Imperial Starfleet, and I am proud of that. All that is good in the Empire comes from you and those like you.
He patted her hand.
But every rule and every ruler has its bad side as well. Here on Jellucan, we have seen more of the bad. But we shall not waver in our loyalty.
She thought again of the sooty skies, the mountains scarred with deep gashes that looked like the claw marks of some monstrous beast. Her father refused to give way, even when everything around him spoke of corruption and ruin.
It's only Jellucan, the result of one dishonest governor. Higher officials don't know the truth, because if they did, they'd take action.
So Sienna told herself. But even within her own mind, the rationalization sounded so laughable that she could not believe them, much less speak them aloud. She kept thinking of Ronadam's face as he'd granted her leave, and how he'd been so completely certain that the Imperial courts would make the right decision. He knew that because he knew the right decision would not be the one that arrived at the truth. It would be the one that justified any actions taken by Imperial officials. The appearance of fairness mattered more than the reality. And yet,
not one person from the Kindred, Papa?
He gestured toward the empty sand, the lack of flags. After that, there seemed to be nothing more to say. Sienna moved through the house as if in a trance, putting away the extra soup and cleaning the pots. Once again, half of her world seemed dreamlike, but now it was her own home that had become surreal to her.
How could she be in such beloved surroundings and still feel so small and sick inside?
She almost longed to be back on the Executor, where the recirculated air smelled of ozone and nobody ever deviated from the safety of the rules. The final transport journey to Jellucan had taken 10 hours. Sienna had been too agitated even to think of sleeping during the trip. Now, another 10 hours later, weariness had more than caught up with her. Her head swam and her eyes stung. But during times of trial, someone always remained awake at the house of the accused. Normally, loyal friends and family members took turns for the overnight vigils, but Sienna and her father were alone. As tired as she was, she knew Papa was even more worn down.
"Go to bed," she said quietly. "I'll keep the vigil."
"You need your rest."
"And you don't?"
"After you made the trip all the way here..."
But her father's voice trailed off. He lacked even the strength to fight her. Outside, she heard the humming of a ridge crawler. She was so eager for the approach of a friend that the sound made her ears prick up, but immediately she chastised herself. Many people travel this way farther down into the valleys. They haven't come for you. But then, the ridge crawler stopped. Next, Sienna heard footsteps, and, oh, thank the force, the unmistakable sound of a stick being thrust into sand. Smiling triumphantly, Sienna patted her father's shoulder and ran to the door. At least one person had been faithful. One person had stood by them, no matter what. Would it be one of the Niers? Pale-skin, blushing scarlet as they apologized for coming so late? Would it be one of the elders, saying he took the risk of defying the Imperial officials on behalf of all the kindred? She flung open the door, even before their visitor could knock, then froze in shock. It was impossible to move or even to speak any word besides his name. Sienna whispered, "Thane?" Chapter 20. As often as Sienna had thought about Thane, even though he remained part of her, she had genuinely believed she would never see him again. And yet, there he stood in front of her, unsure of his welcome, his pale blue eyes unfathomable. Her father spoke then.
"Yes?
Mr. Rhee, it's Thane Kyrell. I heard about Sienna's mother and I wanted to stand vigil with you, if you'll have me." Thane gestured toward the trough of sand where a lone flag stood. "Sienna told me once that people from outside the kindred could bring a plain red flag, since we don't have family banners. At least, I think that's what she told me." He hesitated for the first time, and the uncertainty she briefly glimpsed in him made Thane look more familiar, like the boy she remembered. But that moment didn't last long. That boy faded away, leaving a stranger behind.
"Did I remember the ritual correctly?"
"You did." The words came out more evenly than Sienna would have thought she could manage. Thane nodded, acknowledging her words as rigidly as he'd once acknowledged orders.
"Then may I stand with you? Or should I leave?"
The obvious subtext. "Are you going to turn me into the Empire?" She had sworn to do it. Her oath of loyalty demanded no less, especially now that she knew Thane had joined the Rebel Alliance. But the sanctity of standing vigil was supreme. Anyone who staked his honor on yours deserved the protection of your house. So when her father glanced at her, eyebrow raised, she nodded and took a step back from the door so Thane could walk inside. He had been listening more carefully than she'd thought back in those days in the fortress, when she'd tried to explain the beliefs and rituals of the kindred to him as they whiled away the hours. He addressed her father properly, bowing his head slightly in respect.
"Perrone Rhee, I believe in the honor of your family. I thank you for your decision to stand vigil with us."
Her father hesitated. He had met Thane on only a few occasions and had never seen him as anything but a privileged rich boy who piggybacked his way to success on Sienna's shoulders. Certainly, he had never shaken Thane's hand before, but he did so now. Sienna shut the door, her hands so numb with shock that she fumbled with the bolt. It had been 3 years since they'd said goodbye. She made it down to ground level that night before she'd begun to cry. She doubted Thane had lasted much longer.
"I told him I would turn him in if I ever saw him again. I told him if he ever returned to Jellucan, he would be captured, imprisoned, possibly killed."
Even lesser treasons had become capital crimes in the past few years. But Thane had returned anyway.
"All right."
Thane stood in the center of their main room, tall and imposing in a domed room that seemed too small for him.
"What do you need me to do?"
Her father gestured to the table.
"Your presence is enough. Have you eaten? We have soup, thanks to Sienna. I don't want to impose."
You're standing vigil, Sayana said. The words came out more sharply than she'd intended. You stand with our house. That means you're entitled to our hospitality and our protection while you're here.